And the weather today will be a high of 15 degrees centigrade, low of 11 degrees centigrade. It'll be cloudier and cooler with the possibility of showers later. Good morning, Ellie Sample. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, Alex. How the devil are you?
Well, you know, Ellie, there are times when, despite the quality of the commentary that Siren FM provided last night between 7 and just before 10 o'clock with the superlative match commentary, a live commentary of the Cathedral's Cup, mm-hmm. I'm afraid that a final result of Lincoln City 1, Bishop Grosseteste 3...
Gosh.
It's a bit of a downer on the whole thing, really. I know Lincoln City as a football has beaten Wrexham 2-1, but, you know, we had hoped we'd retain the Cathedral's Cup. Of course, earlier in the year, it was Lincoln City, or shall we say, the University of Lincoln, 6. Bishop Grosseteste 1.
But if we say it's all about the taking part, Alex, how do you feel then?
We're into cliches, exactly. We're into those kind of cliches and so on. And the only thing I can actually say is, at least on aggregate, the University of Lincoln are still ahead 7-4.
Do you know what Stuart Lee said about football, though? He said 22 millionaires messing up a pitch.
I'm glad you did, Ellie, because, you know, somehow there was a moment there where we could have actually, within literally 3.5 minutes of broadcasting time, have actually sort of had major sort of issues.
Putting together an audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk.
So all's good then. That's the important thing. Gabriella, hopefully you can cope and you're not too saddened by the result of the Cathedral Cup. As we said there, I'll say it one more time. Bishop Grosseteste 3, University of Lincoln 1.
I think I'll live, but...
You are funny, Gabriella.
That's the critical line. Now, the good news is I hold in my left hand a superlative text entitled The Lincolnshire Puppy.
Oh, that sounds
lovely. Written by Ellie Sample.
Oh, my God, do my talents ever stop?
It's a bit... Shall I just read a little bit for your good self, Gabriella, just to sort of work our way through this?
Yeah, of course, I love puppies.
The Lincolnshire puppy lives in Lincoln City at the top of Steep Hill, where it's ever so pretty. His eyes sparkle with fire, his fur's black as night. In mischief and mayhem, this puppy delights. He ran through the market and stole all the cheese. Look out, cried Sam Poacher, that puppy has fleas. He hid in the cathedral and knocked over a screen. He was chased by the bishop, the verger and dean. The policeman then caught him, and in a serious tone, told the Lincolnshire puppy it was time to go home.
Oh, my goodness, you do that so well. I think we should do an audio book.
Well, I'm always available for your good self, Ellie. It's classical stuff. Does that tug on the Frodo-esque heartstrings, Gabby?
That was very sweet, but I don't think Frodo would make it up Steep Hill.
He's a pug.
I'll tell you what, with the temperature,
he's a very
in this,
lazy one.
The temperature we've got in this studio, I'm surprised two hobbits haven't turned up and thrown a ring in, to be honest.
Nice. See what you did there? Exactly. Always on the case, thinking about the whole routine. Ben Lucas says with us as well. Ben,
morning.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are we all? Are we all well?
I think we've identified that we're still alive, we're still functioning, we're coping with details.
I feel like in the book we should have a mention of Lincolnshire sausages, if you want to make it full Lincolnshire.
There is a picture of a sausage stall.
There is indeed, yes. I mean, there are lots more things there. I mean, you've got a white poodle, you've got a labradoodle in there, you've got a mouse in a shoe, you've got... This is postgraduate stuff, Ellie.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to do a course. I'm going to do a critical analysis.
So in terms of that, and it's even got the flag of Lincolnshire as well. Now, where can people actually pick up copies of Ellie Sample's The Lincolnshire Puppy?
Well, they're being given free to all primary school children of the age of 5 and under, although I don't think there is anyone under 5 in a primary school, but they are being distributed to nurseries and schools, and those are going out at the moment. If you don't receive one and you desperately want one, then please contact us at the university and we'll send you one.
Fantastic. You can read about the adventures of a Lincolnshire puppy. He gets into all sorts of scrapes until his friends show him that learning is fun and that he can aim high and be anything he wants to be.
It's true, Alex. Like you and like me and like Ben, you can be whatever you want to be. Yeah.
Simply be, as Neil Diamond once said in Jonathan Swift. suddenly I feel as though the result has faded into insignificance now. You know, I feel as though we're kind of ascending to a whole new level, which is phenomenal. Gabriella, what have you been doing and what are you up to currently as an ace journalism graduate from a couple of years ago, but now actually one of Gibraltar Chronicle's top reporters? What sort of things are happening in or on the Rock?
On the Rock, well, I'm going to go to court this morning. I went yesterday to the University of Gibraltar. We opened one a couple of years ago. And spoke to some staff at St. George's Hospital who had made their first ever visit to Gibraltar for a trauma course. So that was interesting. And there's a lot going on. We've got the chief minister in New York giving his UN speech.
Now, let's just hold it there, because somehow I think there's something charming about, you know, the chief minister of Gibraltar, not the world's biggest place, really, let's be honest, you know, in comparison to Vladimir Putin and other sort of countries, etc. But there he is in New York giving his speech. Mm. Now, is there a tendency for those other world leaders, Gabby, to turn around and say, "Ah, teeny tiny Gibraltar there"?
Or it's like when you're speed dating and someone comes along and thinks, "I'll get a drink now."
Sound like you're talking from experience now.
Oh, it's sad you don't get to 46 without some experiences, Ben.
Don't go there, Ben, please.
I've got a long way to go.
Well, there you go.
Just the baby.
But what's the kind of feeling in Gibraltar? Is it a case of go, guy, go for
we
it?
We do it annually. Yeah. So there's, I guess people kind of care. But we do it annually, so it's we talk about pretty much the same every year. And, yeah, I think everyone in Gibraltar feels, I guess, proud in a way to be represented abroad. For us, it's a big deal to always make sure that we're known no matter how small we are.
And so you should, because that's part and parcel of the rich tapestry. Now, Gabby, whilst you're actually there, you can hopefully help with that little challenge you actually had. Ellie, you appreciate this. When you get proofs back from the printers, you think, yeah, it's all right, and then you get sort of the first read, you think, no! No! Why have they actually missed out that particular letter in that particular side of things?
Normally it's because you haven't proof-checked it properly, what? I have to say. I mean, we're in the middle of our prospectus at the moment, which is 300 pages and about, oh gosh, I don't know, 70,000 words of words.
Exactly. And words of wisdom, words of truth, words of marvellous things there. But yes, so obviously our proofing is there.
Gone wrong anyway, Alex?
Nothing's gone wrong. It's just sort of opened up into a whole new opportunity. The first tranche of official calendars, which I'm going to invite you, Eddie, at this particular stage. Would you like to have a collector's item with a typographical error that's actually in there?
Yes, that would be the one that everyone wants on eBay.
Would you have thought so? Well, I think it's a definite yes. Or would you say the other alternative is waiting a few weeks until we actually get the next batch?
No,
that's okay, because I'm now easing to one side, and I will pass over Southside Broadcasting, Siren FM, Adventures in Podcasting, and not Podcasting.
But there
we are, you see. And Ellie, if you'd like to actually open up that calendar, you will find in January, not only is it Judy Corn, but you are officially a calendar girl.
I'm a calendar girl. Who could have thought this could have happened at 46? Ben looks horrified.
Yep. Ben, check out September. That's
God
all I have to say.
Just
check out September. And our whole world
fabulous.
Is in there. So you see, it's the exchange of gifts here. You know, post Lincolnshire Day, we have the exchange of gifts.
Ellie brings everywhere. But, yeah. Judy Gordon has made it onto every page.
Well, she was the first ever midweek drivette, of course, Ellie. So,
and she is truly beautiful.
Well, there you go, exactly. So
made it. I've made it.
I've made it,
everyone.
Exactly.
You've cut half of Katie Dawes' face off.
You might. Katie appears in various other ways. You might still be waiting for your jingle, Ben. But at the end of the day, you've made the 2017.
Exactly.
Calendar.
I have.
These are fabulous. These are absolutely fabulous. How do the listeners get hold of these, Alex?
Oh, well, they can always write into us, and I'm sure we could actually have competition prizes, etc. They tend to be a sort of select group every year that we tend to provide for sort of people that have starred over the last 12 months. And obviously, Elliot, you're there in full force.
Well, I found Carenza as well, Carenza Lewis from Team on the back as well.
Exactly, I'd say. Well, I thought it's always good if you find Carenza, because in so many ways it's so similar to her archaeological work. She finds lots of things all the way, really.
We should do a sort of find Carenza, like a Where's Carenza?
We put it on the last month as well, so it's like you're finally right at the bottom.
Exactly.
To dig deep,
that's
find
the message. Have you got any questions, Gabriella, you'd like to put to either Ben Lewis or indeed Ellie at this particular stage? I mean, Ellie's got heaps of fantastic events that are coming up. I mean, actually, last Friday alone, we had the delights, if you had a time machine, to go back to see Carenza's wonderful coordination of Lincoln Lights. It was a fantastic event from that point of view.
It was fantastic. And then on Monday, we had Professor Chris Packham, better known for his wildlife work on TV. Oh, he led the most amazing trip, a bioblitz around the campus, where we found water shrews and reed warblers, and it was just the best day ever.
Fantastic.
I guess I would probably want to know, what was your inspiration to write about the Lincolnshire dog?
Or puppy.
How come you... Yeah, puppy. Well, they're the same.
It's true. It's very true.
Thank goodness someone here is professional, Gabriella, because that was a key question, actually. It wasn't a chance undertaking. We run a Lincolnshire Outreach Network, and it's really key in terms of getting people to think about not just higher education, but further education as well. We're linked up with seven other colleges, and the idea is to get young people who wouldn't have the opportunity to experience further or higher education to consider it and to engage in it. And there's an awful lot of research out there that says that by the age of four, it's predetermined as to whether or not you will go to university or college. So what we wanted to do was get really, really young children and their parents having conversations about their future. And that's not to say that college or university is right for everyone, but it's just to say, open up, have those conversations, think about what you want to be when you're grown up. It might be a fireman or a rocket man, but it might be
a vet.
A vet?
Or to sort out the puppy.
Yes, it could be a vet, or it could be a red arrow, or...
Or a printer, to get to fix Alex's mistake.
And it's strange, well, I was thinking, maybe Adventures in Poe Casting, it's got a telecut-tubby sort of feel to
the
whole
thing. I really like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Could be a red
arrow. That could be my next book.
Well, there you go. Anyway, life continues. Clearly, by the way, if you're looking for one of those collector's editions with the typer, it's all right. Ellie's got probably the sole one that's actually there. We'll have a couple that actually there.
I'm very lucky.
Anyway, there you have it. Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Yes, of course I have.
And the next question, Ben, is what?
Will you be joining us again?
As long as Alex says yes, I will be back.
Oh, I think it did me. We'll see you in about 168 hours or so from now. Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar, we salute you.
Hooray!
Rutherford, Phil Collins and Tony Banks, who were the three folk comprising Genesis when they made Follow You, Follow Me. It's coming around to, well, just after 18 minutes past 8 o'clock here on Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. We have the delightful Director of Communications and Events and much more, and writer, of course, Ellie Sample with
Hello,
us.
Hello, Alex, good to be here.
And we have Ben Lewis as well.
Morning, everyone.
Splendid, so there we are. Ben and Ellie, all set for your good self, Richard Fitzwilliams, as we talk Elysium, I believe.
Elysium, actually, it's Imperium.
Oh, Imperium.
Imperium,
but... Listen, I've been having a bit of a podcasting day, don't worry.
Those of us who believe that this movie would... It's always interesting to see Daniel Radcliffe. I did love him in the Harry Potter movies, and I saw him on stage in Equus with Richard Griffiths, which, you know, it's a challenging role if you were nude in the West End stage that early. And to see him here, he's a skinhead. But having said that, the role was challenging. The problem is the movie. He plays Nate Foster in Imperium, a young FBI analyst, and Agent Angela Zampino in the FBI 2, played by a feisty Toni Collette, thinks that he'll be very useful to infiltrate white supremacist groups because he's a loner. A lot of them are loners, and this is an opportunity to prove himself on the ground so he could connect with outsiders with warped perceptions who can become extremists. The fear is that there's going to be a fiendish act of sabotage, the contamination of the water supply of Washington, D.C., and so he goes on a dangerous journey. I do have to say that it's interesting that this film, directed by Daniel Ragusis, its co-writer, Mike German, has actually investigated similar extremist right-wing networks for the FBI. The most potent threat can come from the enemy within, not only the Al-Qaeda and ISIL. And the disappointment of this movie is you expect and you need knife-edge tension. It's bizarre. I mean, good heavens, it's absolutely weird to look at. These villains, I've always thought of with Westerns and with a large number of movies, that you can tell whether they're good or bad just by looking at them. You know, sometimes I'm on the tube or wandering in the streets and I look at people around me and think, how would I cast these if I was actually choosing them in a movie, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, or whatever. And we actually have a Ku Klux Klan wedding in front of flaming swastikas. There's a march where there's actually a Hitler lookalike, apart from the other ghouls. And my least favorite of all, I think, cupcakes decorated with swastikas at a fascist tea party. I mean, all of this is, well, I mean, they're sincerely held beliefs, you could say, in evil ideologies. But the real problem with this movie is that we keep getting footage as though these people are hallucinating of Klansmen, of Nazis in montages, even images of Napoleon. It's all linked to the lunatic idea of Caucasian superiority. But the repetitive and unsubtle nature of these do a lot to undermine this movie. I mean, it's visually pretty deft. You can hear, which is quite something. You can't in a lot of movies. But what it needed was more tension. Ratcliffe is good. I mean, he's a good actor, and here he's given something to get his teeth into. And there's a portrayal as an extremist commentator, Dallas Wolf, by Tracy Letts, which he vaguely reminded me of a certain Donald. I need go no further. But
oh, steady on. You know, let's not. I mean, we already had Trek against Trump last night on the production, which is Star Trek unifying against Trump and so on. Ellie, you were about to say something.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say it's a bit sort of like Truth TV or Louis Theroux, isn't it? It's not really sort of worthy of a film. It's sort of like one of those documentaries that is constantly on, either Hitler or sharks on.
Killer clergy, that's quite an interesting one as well these days.
Serial killers and
Well, I mean, quite frankly, here you've got an extraordinary load of nutcases. And the problem is you can...
That can be said about various political party conferences, Richard, as well. But still.
Well, it's no question it can be said about a lot of people, but if you want to see real fascist raving loonies. And the trouble is, I mean, it's not funny. Some of these people do exist, and some of them are absolutely bizarre. But all this business of it's rather like the famous scene in Monty Python with the People's Liberation Front of Judea and the Judean People's Liberation Front arguing about who should go first in the march. You know, should it be the Aryan People's What's It, or the Caucasian What's It?
Oh, I mean, if
you enjoyed this film.
I mean, it really, bits of it, but it's not supposed to be funny. What we should be feeling is a real threat from a lot of sinister individuals, and there are a very large number, not as a percentage, but numerically on the far right, but it needed a movie where it was hard edge and it really gripped you. This doesn't.
Richard, it's interesting that Daniel's got the other film out at the same time, Swiss Army Knife Man, which he's been really promoting at the moment. Have you seen that?
He doesn't say a lot in that, of course.
No.
The answer is yes, and I have spared.
Yeah, I thought you might.
I have spared.
How much can you say about a flatulent corpse? Let's be honest.
Well, you could say that it's a flatulent movie. It's useless. It's one of the worst I've seen. I do online reviews, and quite frankly, I wanted to give it no stars at all. Do I need to say more?
No.
Full Rotten Tomatoes here.
Gosh, I'm not going to bother. I was thinking maybe on Saturday.
No, I beg you. There is so
do not.
To see.
No.
Please don't go and waste time on this weird buddy movie.
It's being billed as like a cult classic, though, Richard.
Well, I mean, yes, because what happens is sometimes you get something that's so bizarre and so weird that, well, people encourage others to go and see it. I'm just simply saying that befriending a fettered corpse is certainly an unusual way of
making
a movie, but there's nothing wrong in an unusual idea. If it had come off, I'd have been all for it. It doesn't come off. It's boring, repetitive, infuriating, utter rubbish.
So, I have to confess, I did actually take Richard Fitzwilliam's recommendation, which changed my own perception, and last week, as opposed to going to see Eva Green in Miss... whatever's School for the Gifted...
Oh, Peculiar Children.
Exactly, Peculiar Children.
Yes.
I stepped into The Magnificent Seven, and I was pleasantly surprised, Richard, so I will
still need
that.
To watch it.
I mean, it had its virtues, and it had enough to make it great fun, I thought, yes.
I kind of...
But one movie, if I may move away from Swiss Army, I really, really was sparing everybody any views
I'm
on it.
I'm sorry for asking. Sorry.
Oh, no, but I mean, it's I'm glad, I hope I persuaded you that this movie...
Don't go.
I'm not going. I'm saving my £7.50.
Unless they pay you significant sums. Yes.
Had so much potential and should have been good. We come to Free State of Jones. Now, this is a story, I have to say, I didn't know. It's directed by Gary Ross, who did the first tremendously successful Hunger Games. It should be a fascinating little-known story about the Civil War. A Southern deserter, and it is true that in the South, and also apparently in the North, you could buy your way out of conscription, so it was pretty corrupt. Newt Knight, played by Matthew McConaughey, escapes from the corrupt recruiting system and hides with runaway slaves in a Mississippi bayou. And as the tide of war turns, he gets more deserters joining him, and he then begins to lead a small army. I had no idea of this. I mean, it's a fascinating story, and I'd never heard of it. He occupies several counties and a town, and though he gets little help from the North, they're attacked by brutal Southern militias. I mean, Knight lives with a black woman, Rachel, played by the excellent Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who is the love of his life, and she gets on, fortunately, with his common-law wife, who is Serena, played by Kerry Russell. And Matthew McConaughey, let's be frank about it, he's got the presence and he's got the physicality, and he just about carries this movie, because here is the disaster, something that's got fascinating visuals, the scenes in the bayou, the sound and so forth, some of the early action scenes. I mean, these are superb. And it's got McConaughey, as I say. But what it does, when the war ends, it turns it into some form of weird history lesson. We have 20 years of every piece of legislation which was affecting slavery and how it was abolished, and then how the South tried to resurrect it in various forms and so forth. We have one scene per piece of legislation. It's written as though it were some form of textbook, which I, as a child, so to speak, a viewer, was being subjected to. It is so simplistic. And this could have made a second movie, which could have been fascinating, which is a completely different thing. And to add, I have to say, to the rather weird intention of this movie to submerge us into stories, it's a fact that Newt had a son with Rachel, and their descendant in the 1950s has 1/8 black blood, so his marriage to a white woman in Mississippi became the subject of a bitter court case, almost unbelievably. And we see flash forwards, scenes of this case, when we don't get to know the people. So, in fact, what you've got here is a material for something like three movies with extremely good sound, excellent visuals. You've got McConaughey doing his best. But it's so impeccably liberal. You have cardboard cut-out Southern villains and so forth.
Is it too politically correct, Richard?
It's not that so much. One expected that. It is just you're submerged with material. Some of it's fascinating. But you can't...
Swiss Army
really...
Man might be the better choice.
Oh, steady, steady. Don't get him started again, please.
Different language. It might be the... I didn't hear, unfortunately.
just as well, Richard. It was a suggestion that maybe Swiss Army Knife could be a better choice, please.
Not Army Knife. No, that is an excellent idea. A knife...
We'll end it then.
I called the characters rather early. That is a superb idea, except that one of them is dead.
Yeah, that's... having put your finger on the floor in the argument there, let's just find out. Ben, Imperium, Free State of Jones, any of those particularly float your boat?
Based on Richard's recommendations... Aww. Potentially Free State of Mind, but...
Free State of Jones.
I'm thinking of a song now.
It's like Elysium Imperium. There's Imperium. Free State. Yeah. It's like podcasting, podcasting.
Podcasting,
oh,
yeah.
Lord.
It's just one of them days.
Ellie.
I've decided no to everything. They all look pretty awful, and I just wish someone would make a decent film.
Well, I mean, American Beauty is going to open in a while, and we'll be... discussing that when it does, but I mean, there is a great deal, including Isabel Huppert.
Pete's Dragon was very enjoyable. I thought that was fantastic.
So
the
remake. I did want to see Pete's Dragon, and I'm looking forward to the next Star Wars movie.
Exactly.
No, but I mean, Isabel Huppert is an academic, the philosophy teacher, forced to come to terms with real life as it's pretty brutally for her. I mean, that is something that you'd absolutely love, I'm sure. Free State of Jones had so much potential. The problem was it was squandered by, as I say, as a sort of weird history essay.
Squandered potential.
Three films or four films, I mean, just crammed into over 2 hours. But we have the London Film Festival on, so if you...
Precisely, because that's something we'll hopefully be at the end when we visit London again.
Yes, absolutely, on Sunday, yes, indeed. And we have over 300 films from over 70 countries. And the big theme last year was diversity, where they were looking at more roles for... This is terribly, terribly important, obviously, more roles for women, equal pay for women, women directors, that there should be many, many more of those. And there was a symposium on that, and this year it is promoting black talent, and this is of course tremendously important because there is so much of it, and it doesn't, as we all know, get the chance that it ought to. And the opening of this yesterday, I went to see a preview of United Kingdom, and again we'll be discussing that later. I do have to say it's a fascinating story. It's one of Africa's great love stories, the romance between Seretse Khama, who was later president of Botswana, and a white woman, Ruth, a white woman, in the 1940s, and there's absolutely no question that... this caused enormous controversy. I mean, it caused...
It looks as though, as ever, the London Film Festival is going to have lots of things to talk about and discuss over the next couple of weeks, so we'll work our way through that process. And, of course, it's not this weekend, it's the weekend after that. It's the official Richard Fitzwilliam's birthday as well.
Oh, happy birthday!
Remember this date.
What date?
My birthday.
Yes, of course. No, we always remember the date. Sorry, Richard. It's all
terrible, you know, at remembering these things. Incidentally, I must mention, it's quite interesting. I went to the press conference for United Kingdom. It stars David Oyelowo as Seretse Khama and Rosamund Pike as Ruth. And they're two of our top performers, and it's directed by Amer Santin. She is the first British black woman director to have a film opening the festival. So, but whereas I had reservations about the film, she deserves congratulations because she made the excellent Belle, a movie about what was set at the time of the slave trade, and a movie set in Kenwood, incidentally.
And Richard, I know we could go on with that, but I also want to mention, in terms of just making sure that we do celebrate the diversity, of course, our very own Chancellor Victor Adeboli is going to be one of the great minds coming up very shortly, I believe.
Lord Victor, yes, the most fabulous Chancellor, and that's on the 10th of October. And anyone here in Lincoln who wants an insight into the working of the House of Lords, he's going to be telling you absolutely everything you ever wanted to know about the House of Lords, but were afraid to ask.
And the House of Lords is apparently, I mean, I think it does such fascinating work, and I do think that this, just if I may mention, would be a riveting lecture, because normally all we hear about the House of Lords is about those, and there are quite a number of peers who are pretty appalling in one way or another, or have committed various offences and so on, whereas the amount of work, it's enormous as a revising chamber, and especially now there's so little opposition, quite frankly. The Lords has very much come into its own. The problem, or one of the problems, is its size, because only the Chinese National People's Congress,
Richard, clearly you should be at Lord Adebolu's discussion and talk to actually address that whole thing.
It is very, very interesting, because I did a broadcast recently, and those about the House of Lords, it was on BBC Wales, and putting it mildly, the other commentators were totally scathing, because the headline-grabbing aspect of the Lords, you get a peer who's misbehaved in one way or another, you get one who's been imprisoned and so forth. It makes headlines and it influences people's perceptions. But the actual revising nature of the chamber, and also the expertise of so many of those, of the peers, is another aspect to it.
And that is quite simply why the University of Lincoln is proud and delighted to have Lord Victor as our Chancellor. Isn't that right, Ellie?
That is absolutely spot on. He's probably the only man who... I was reading one of his speeches the other day, and he said to one of the other members, "You are taking the bleep, 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 bleep."
Don't go there, please.
I'm not going there again. I'm not going there again. But he stands for the people. Wonderful man.
The House of Lords, it's tremendously polite, and I've seen debates, though, a long time ago, and it has fascinating traditions.
And the police are coming now, Richard, to take you away. Ben, last two questions
for
Richard, please.
Oh, goodness gracious me, I mean...
Richard, have you enjoyed your...
There's the fire engines outside.
They're coming, Richard. Have you enjoyed your time with us, Richard?
There are two fire engines out there.
We'll take that.
I'm alarmed at all this.
Please don't review us.
We take that as a yes, Richard, as we leave you with the fire engines and a sort of
I look forward to it.
Exactly, and we'll see you
lovely
again
next week.
Lovely
to talk to you, Richard.
And to talk to you.
See you later, Richard.
Bye-bye.
It's less of a sort of like more kind of colossal epic for the 21st century. So we reach the stage whereby everybody tends to have irritants such as call waiting, such as actually dealing with consumer matters and so on. Recent research has revealed that a massive 93% of chronologically gifted folk have come up with the conclusion that customer service is letting them down. In fact, one in five of older people say that they've stopped buying goods because employees lack the skills to meet their needs. As we head into the excitement that is National Customer Service Week, to address this and a few other issues related to it, we're delighted to be able to welcome that superlative chief executive of the Institute of Customer Service. It's Joe Corson. How are you, Joe?
I'm very well, and thank you very much for such a warm welcome.
I think it's only important that, you know, interviewee-interviewer connections sort of work in the same way as hopefully customers and customer service should hopefully do, but perhaps aren't, according to a recent survey by the Institute of Customer Service.
Indeed, and it's been really interesting. So the Institute undertook a survey of over 1,600 customers and 200 organisations looking at how different age groups are being served. And the findings were really interesting because 63% of businesses are saying that they are focusing on the younger demographic, which obviously has potential and is good. However, they could be missing out on significant revenue as the older generation do tend to spend much more on holidays, insurance and utilities.
Well, I mentioned my own little bête noire, which is call waiting and where you actually have a range of choices to take you by the range of choices. Suddenly that sort of automation really helps matters when it comes to trying to get through to customers.
Well, it's really interesting, the whole debate about tetanus and human interaction. So technology most definitely has a place. So if it helps or makes it more easy, so to your point, you don't mind pressing a few buttons if you get through and you get your issue or your problem resolved. But there is most definitely a place for high-level interpersonal skills and much level, what we would call, much higher-level emotional intelligence. Yeah, and all our research from the Institute indicates to us that where organisations invest in their training, their development of their staff, as well as making sure the processes work well, then that's a much better outcome for you and I, the customer.
So why are businesses actually focusing on younger people? Is it simply a case of they want tomorrow's customers now, but then surely when they become tomorrow's customers, they get older and then they'll be put to one side?
Indeed. So, yes, it's about lifetime value of a customer. And absolutely, just because they are a customer today, unless you work at this, it doesn't mean that they're going to remain a customer for tomorrow or for future years. I also think there's a really interesting piece here, and it doesn't really matter about whether it's millennials or baby boomers. The reality is we need to serve all customer groups and serve them well. Because, and you mentioned this in your intro, where we don't serve customers well, then we're more likely to vote with our feet. And over 50% of consumers, whatever age, have stopped buying products or services because of poor service.
7% of older people think that customer service is geared towards people their own age. That leaves 93%, as we said, that don't. That's quite a startling statistic.
It is a startling statistic. And again, even on the millennials, they are also saying that they do not feel that they're being served to the level that should be. So about 11% of them are saying that they've have something that's geared towards my age. So this is about really understanding the age group that you are serving and really working hard, particularly, as I was saying, around the areas of communication skills, building rapport, listening, and actually demonstrating empathy with the customer.
I'm reminded of the Simon and Garfunkel song that probably many baby booners will be familiar with, Keep the Customer Satisfied. But in terms of that, are there processes in place to actually improve this? Is it a case of, well, it's going to remain pretty constant? Are there sort of things that clearly the Institute of Customer Service and indeed events such as National Customer Service Week can actually do, not only to raise the profile of this, but also to ensure that firms don't lose out on substantial sums of money simply because they've got poor customer service?
Absolutely. So if you look at the Institute, our whole role and remit is to help organisations to get better at delivering great customer experiences. And that can be through a whole range of things, training, development, through qualifications, accreditation, and really trying to recognise both the individuals that work in this, because there are many great individuals, over 70% of the workforce in the UK are in customer-related jobs. So helping them to get better and to be recognised, because there are many great examples of good customer service too.
How does the UK compare with, say, America, where we're regularly sort of led to believe that actually customer service is king, that's the kind of gold standard?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because when we look at our research, and we've done some research comparing ourselves with Europe rather than America, the UK comes out very well, interestingly, in the fact that we actually score higher than about 8 other countries in Europe. In terms of America, it depends. It depends on which state that you might actually be comparing yourself with. But the really important thing for me is knowing your customer and knowing the culture of the country that you are actually working in. And in the UK, customer service is all about an authentic experience.
And in terms of people wanting to drill down and find out more information about the survey, where's the best place to go?
To the instituteofcustomerservice.com website.
Any final tips, Joe, that you might provide either businesses, because constantly within the public sector we're kind of being informed we need to improve our services, we need to look at this, we need to reduce times and so on. What would you say your top Joe Corson tip would be for businesses who are thinking, actually, we need to maybe look at this?
Okay, five key things. Professionalism of our staff, how do we train and develop our staff? The ease that you are able to negotiate or get through the organisation, if there is a complaint, deal with it properly, the product service experience, and finally, speed.
And that is why, Joe Corson, you are the Chief Executive, Institute of Customer Service. It's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you, good self. Hopefully we've set a few hairs running. Have you had a reasonably interesting and reasonably satisfying experience on the interview process today, Joe?
I certainly have. Thank you very much for your time.
Splendid. There we are, Joe Corson, Chief Executive Officer for the Institute of Customer Service. And it is National Consumer Week. Were you aware of that, Ian Lennox, in Tyneside?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, there we are. 93% of people unhappy with the level and quality of customer service that they receive. It's not good. It's not something you can't say that about.
Not from you, though, Alex. We've got 100% satisfaction here.
Well, thank you, Ellie Sample.
Thank you.
And good morning, Hannah Brown. How are you?
I'm good now, thank you.
Excellent. We were a bit concerned because we thought, apart from myself, everybody else who'd partaken of the farewell cake last night, gone completely. We had a text from Tessa saying she's a bit poorly, unwell, etc. And you weren't arriving. You thought, what had happened? You know, but thankfully we heard that was it the revenge of Jessica Ward. Jessica's now left us, Ian, by the way, in case you're wondering.
Oh,
yeah. that's what we say. It's all right. It was quite tearful last night. But at the end, as Hannah will attest to, I mean, she gave up after 6 o'clock, really. So it was a different light entirely.
I had to go to a meeting.
Exactly. It's the way forward.
Where's Jessica going?
So she's going to a canoe somewhere, I believe. No, she's actually still... She's been accepted by the university rowing team. And as a result of that,
right,
commitments to rowing means... I don't know why she can't have a mobile phone in the boat with her, but, you know, that's what she does.
That's brilliant. How are you, though, Ian? It's Ellie here. I haven't spoken to you for a while.
I know. Yeah, I've been ill recently, but I'm all right now.
You were in Bulgaria. That's not being ill. That's called
taking vacation. No. When I got back, I ate something that didn't agree with me.
Taking Sam Allardyce time out.
No one wants to hear about that sort of stuff. So.
No, not really.
It's very right. True. Ellie, you know, she cuts
that's
across
the... That's one nil to you with our sequel lines before the end of this, I think.
Well, yeah, the tragedy, of course, Ian, was that, as you know, keeping abreast of football in Lincolnshire, that the Cathedral Cup result last night was Bishop Gristest 3, University of Lincoln 1, which...
I'm glad you mentioned that, because it hasn't reached Newcastle yet.
Well, more of a loss for Newcastle, it has to be said, because apparently Bishop Grisest were at the races, so to speak, to mix metaphors. I'm using a cliche yeah. Commercial accommodators from that point of view.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, it was a game of two halves, and one side was over the moon, and the other side was thick as a parrot, and that's pretty much it, really. So,
now it all makes sense.
Why do people say sick as a parrot? Are parrots physically sick?
I've been to the Parrot Zoo, actually, in Lincolnshire. Yes, and parrots do get quite poorly. They live a very long time, but they suffer from mental health issues. They suffer from all sorts of things.
Well, they come on here, then.
I'm sorry. What are you saying? Some of our best audience members come from
your
parrots.
Your job's under threat, Alex. How many feathers have you got?
I was just about to share with you the news that I have the Ellie Sample text, the Lincolnshire puppy, in my hands at present, Ian.
Right.
And would you like to have Hannah Brown read a short example from the excitement that is the Lincolnshire puppy? She could maybe take a couple of verses focusing on the red arrows. Because this will actually warm up. It'd be good for Ollie and Obo as well. I know they're cats, and I know they're sort of a different line of time, but off you go, Hannah. Just share with us the excitement of at least one page of Ellie Sample's fantastic Lincolnshire puppy.
Okay. Yes, you could be a pilot, tweeted some sparrows, and maybe one day you could join the red arrows. Not me, cried the puppy. I am too stupid to fly. You can, said the policeman. You just have to try.
Hey.
Oh, that was beautiful. You have a beautiful voice.
Thank you.
And a beautiful face. And a beautiful face.
Well, there we are. You see, it just connects in every sense of the word. It's marvellous there. Did that tug the heartstrings, Ian?
I think it was quite good, actually, yeah.
She's quite good.
You sound really surprised, Ian.
We're trying to invoke a bit of sarcasm in our voice. Is it one of the illustrated books for kids, something?
Yes, yes, it is. It's all about raising awareness of education, be it further or higher education, and thinking about it from an early age. But more interestingly, I found the origins of sick of it as a parrot. And apparently it's to do with people smuggling parrots, and allegedly they used to dope the birds on tequila. I'm not sure this is true actually, but this is what I'm kind of discovering. And so the birds would look really, really ill, and they'd have a hangover and be very queasy. And apparently that's one claim as to where the saying sick as a parrot came from.
Oh, it's feasible, isn't it?
I'm not sure, actually, as I read that. And Ben's looking at me in an odd way.
I mean, oftentimes, you know, certainly...
I've got none of what you're saying.
Certainly during Freshers Week or Welcome Week, you know, those parents sick of tequilas. Parents.
Yeah.
You know, it's a blind time.
Is it just another term for being hungover?
Yeah.
Could well be. Although in the aftermarch interviews, I was interested to find that this time around, given that the celebration took place at the University of Lincoln Bar, that it was a kind of reprisal for last year when obviously Sixth War and the University of Lincoln team were celebrating and so on. And actually, most of the University of Lincoln fans apparently left after the third girl went in. They left the Central Bank.
When did it go in? How many minutes?
They were 1-0 up at half-time, 2-0 up shortly after half-time. Lincoln pulled one back to go 2-1. And then either a cracking shot or a goalkeeping error led to Bishop Christest scoring the third. And that was it, really.
Oh, right.
With about sort of 70
minutes. Which league are they in now, Lincoln? They used to be against us, you know.
Yeah, well, Lincoln City, of course. And,
yeah. Oh, so it's Lincoln, sorry.
You could argue that Bishop Grotesque had two Lincoln United players playing for them as well. So, you know,
there's lots of Lincolns, aren't there?
There's Lincoln all over the place, as well as Nebraska.
Lincoln.
Yeah, I know. It's astounding. You know, just because it's in her contractual duties.
Hannah Brown, historic Harwich heroine and hyperbolic midweek drivette.
There is an alternative American version, which we use on a Wednesday evening, but you know, keep it straight from that sort of side of things there. Right, Ian, are you ready to actually critique the country music selection that Camo selected for us yesterday as being the must-listen-to event for at least this week as far as life, the universe and country music fans in the UK are concerned?
Yes, I'll sit down.
That's always good. You know, you've got to prepare and you've got to be sorted out in terms of what we're actually about to hear, because it's The Way I Talk by Morgan Wallen.
It's